ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतंगमय ॐ शांति शांति शांति। लॉर्ड लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, लीड अस फ्रॉम इग्नोरेंस टू इल्यूमिनेशन, लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ टू इमॉर्टैलिटी। ओम पीस 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 बी अनटू ऑल। देयर वाज अ ग्रेट ऋषि सेंट कॉल्ड नारदा। वंस ही अप्रोच्ड अनदर ग्रेट सेंट सीयर एंड पुट हिम दिस क्वेश्चन दैट आई वुड लाइक टू सिट एट योर फीट एंड लर्न have knowledge. The other saint asked him, before I can impart any knowledge to you, I would like to know what you have learned so far. And Narada goes on enumerating, I have studied all the Vedas, all the scriptures, I know all the worldly knowledge too. And he has not left out anything. He was a master of every knowledge in this world. Naturally, the teacher put him another question. Then why did you come to me? You seem to have been a master of learning. You are an encyclopedia. Why have you come to me? Narada gives the most profound answer. He said, though I know all this knowledge, I have no peace of mind and I am suffering a great deal. I would like to learn that knowledge by which I can have peace of mind. And it is also said by great people like you, revered sir, that unless this knowledge comes from the mouth of an enlightened soul, it would not be really fruitful. Then the teacher gives a most profound answer by way of starting that, O Narada, all that you have learned so far is only name, is only sound. And from that point onwards, he leads the disciple step by step how to realize the essence of all learning, all knowledge. Now why, what is knowledge? Ordinary people like us, we do not have any clear idea what is called knowledge. We use the word all the time, I know, I know, I know. But what is the definition of knowledge? Knowledge is that which affects us. Anything that affects us is knowledge. Suppose you are watching a drama and a murderer comes with a shotgun, an actor, and he is acting, play acting. He takes out the gun and then starts shooting into the audience. Would you get up and run away? You enjoy it, and if he has done it well, you will even applaud him, isn't it? Why? Because you have a knowledge that it is only play acting, it's not real. In the same way, suppose a real murderer comes with a gun when you are walking down the street and starts shooting. What will you do? Will you enjoy it? Applause? You just run away from the place, try to escape from it. So you see here, both types of knowledge are there. One type of knowledge is that it is not real, it is only play act, and therefore you did not move from the place, you enjoyed that. In the other case, you have come to know that it is real. If he shoots at you, then you are more likely to be dead. That's why you run away. In the first instance, it is a knowledge that it is not real. In the second instance, it is a real knowledge. So this is the definition of knowledge. Whatever affects us, that is knowledge. Whatever doesn't affect us is only information. So what Narada has acquired so far is only information. So many books, so many wonderful teachings and all that. How many millions of people are reading every day Bibles, Qurans, Vedas and the Gospel of Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda's teaching? Does it really help us, affect us in any way? I'm afraid not much. We are going on in the same way as though God does not exist. Why? Because it has not become real to us. We have not realized it, made it real. That knowledge has not become real to us. It is only bookish learning. And therefore, this type of knowledge is not helping us, is not bringing us peace of mind. So, the definition of knowledge is that which affects us. The second meaning of knowledge is, why do we want knowledge at all? We are after so much to know everything. Man wants to know how to prepare a new recipe. So he has a knowledge. He rings his friend or logs on the internet or does whatever he wants to do. Why does he want it? There is only one purpose of knowledge, one purpose of all knowledge, whatever be the knowledge. What is the purpose? How to become happy, isn't it? As I tell the joke many times, you know, why do people get married? For happiness, isn't it? Why do they get divorced? Again, for happiness only. So knowledge has only one purpose, how to get happy, happiness. So what is then the difference between knowledge and knowledge? All knowledge is not the same. There are two types of knowledge. This is what is enumerated again in one of the other Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad. There are two types of knowledge. The teacher tells the students, Dve vidye veditavye. Two types of knowledge are to be acquired. The lower, apara, and the higher, para. What is the difference between these two? The higher knowledge, the supreme knowledge, yaya tad aksharam adhigamyate, that knowledge by which the indestructible, the infinite, the eternal is attained. Attainment of the eternal means attainment of eternal peace, eternal happiness, eternal bliss. God realization, Sri Ramakrishna's teaching, comes through every page of the Gospel. What is the goal of life? God realization. Are we so eager to have God realization? Not so. Why is it? Because for us, we do not understand what is the meaning of God. Instead of using the word God, if Sri Ramakrishna had used the word happiness, realization of happiness, I think many more of us would be more interested in the Gospel of Ramakrishna. How to have more happiness? Go to any bookshop and the first thing that strikes is how to become a millionaire in 24 hours, how to have success in 3 hours, how to be happy, how to stop worrying and start living. Now the most famous books. How to make friends and influence people. They have been sold in millions. But if you take a Bible or a Gospel or a Upanishad and then put there in the front, let us see how many of us are going to buy it. Why? Because there is a misunderstanding that these books are not going to help us to become happy, to become successful. In reality, these are the books which really help us to attain that eternal, infinite happiness. This Enquiry into the eternal happiness doesn't come to all people. It comes ultimately to everybody, but it comes to very few people at any given time. Why? Because this Maya, this illusive power, or deluding power of God is so strong. Sri Ramakrishna used to give the example that a grain merchant has hundreds of bags of pure rice in the storage. But then you see, wherever there is rice, there will be rats. So, to prevent damage to his rice, he fries a little bit of paddy. And the fried rice is so flavorful and so tasty that all the rats are busy eating them, never going to the real stuff. And out of a small quantity of rice, you can make a huge amount of this fried rice. You know that? Puffed rice. It is one bag full of puffed rice is made up of a small amount of grain. This world is like that. This worldly attractions, they appear to be much more flavorful, much more attractive to us. But there must come a time into everybody's life, and especially at the time of suffering and at the time of death. Who am I? What is life? Why should I die? Is there any way to prevent this old age, suffering, death? These are the existential problems which confront every thinking man. Usually, they are like idiots, ignorant, moodha, deluded, foolish. That's why these questions, whether God exists, whether there is an afterlife, whether there is an eternal happiness, these questions do not ordinarily occur to ordinary man's mind. It is only a person who has done tremendous amount of austerity, acquired lots of merit. For him, the heart becomes purified. And then the inquiry comes. What is life? What is this world? Who am I? Does God exist? All philosophy can be summarized into three questions. Who am I? What is this world? Does God exist? And what is the relationship between me and God and the world? Philosophy tries to give us answers to these three questions. And Upanishads are the Vedanta philosophy, it is said. They tried to solve these problems, and they solved them in their own way. So it is said, at first the inquiring mind tried to find out the solutions to these questions in the external world. Failing to get any real answers, they turned their mind inwards. They started meditating. They purified themselves, and then they discovered the knowledge. And these discoverers of this knowledge are called rishis, seers. Knowledge is already there. It is not to be invented. No knowledge is ever invented by anybody, any type of knowledge. It is only discovered. The first man that discovers becomes famous and rich. He patents the whole lot and he earns a lot of money. That is the only difference. So, we are going to discuss these Upanishads before we actually try to discuss the real Upanishads. I would like to give a little bit of background to that. As I said, this inquiry comes into the purified heart, and this inquiry takes the form of a prayer, and that most famous prayer in the Rig Veda, which I usually chant at the beginning of every class, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, lead me from the unreal to the real. Tamasoma jyotihi gamaya. From ignorance, lead me to illumination. Mrityohuma amrutam gamaya. Lead me from death to immortality. In essence, the Upanishads try to give us this. They try to lead us from the unreal to the real. They give us that knowledge by which our ignorance is dispelled, and they lead us from this ephemeral life to the eternal life. The whole of what we call Hinduism is based upon these Upanishads. The English word, English, we use Upanishads. It is a Sanskrit word. And Upanishads have another name. That name is Vedanta. By Vedanta is meant Upanishads primarily, and also other scriptures which try to elaborate, make more clear the meaning of these Upanishads, like Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutras, epics, Ramayana, Mahabharata, and Puranas or mythological books like Bhagavatam, etc. All these are called Vedanta. And also the books written by great seers, saints, acharyas, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and also the teachings of great people, saints like Sri Ramakrishna, etc. Vedanta is the name of the Upanishads. This word Vedanta actually consists of two words, Veda and Anta. Vedas are the canonical scriptures of Hindus. The word Veda means knowledge. Veda, vid, to know. One who knows is a knower. Veda means knowledge. What type of knowledge? Not the knowledge about the world, not the knowledge that can be obtained through the five sense organs. By Veda is meant only that knowledge which cannot be obtained through the five sense organs. Truly speaking, the scriptures of every religion, the Quran, the Bible, the Tripitaka, all these also can be legitimately called Vedas. The teachings of Jesus Christ, the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, the teachings of all the great saints, they can also be called Vedas, really speaking. Veda means super sensual knowledge. Knowledge about reality. Ultimate reality, highest reality, paravidya, or Brahma jnana, Brahman, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of reality. Now, another point need to be clear here. As I said, knowledge is not invented, it is only discovered. The discoverers of this knowledge are called seers. And therefore, the founder of every religion is in a way only a discoverer of this knowledge. He is not an inventor. And only that knowledge which pertains to the that beyond the five sense organs is really a scripture. I am using the word scripture in a particular sense, in the sense of the Veda or supersensuous knowledge. For example, in the so-called Vedas, traditional Vedas, there are methods prescribed how to worship God, how to perform sacrifices, and there is also knowledge about certain plants. There are also prayers. Let me get another man's wife. Don't ask me where it is. There are also chants, magic formulas. So many things are there. But they are not considered Veda in the primary sense of the word. Only that super sensuous knowledge is called the Veda. If we only understand this, then there need be no quarrel between any religion. Take for example, a Muslim. Suppose you touch the Quran or try to show a bit of what you call disrespect to the book. if you touch the Quran by your foot or in a negligent way, he will come and cut your throat. He will tell you, this is a sacred book and God has revealed this to our Prophet, blessed Muhammad, and therefore you can't touch it. Hindus do not do that. Why? Because this knowledge is not in the books. The book is only just a container. It is meant for us to help us to acquire that knowledge. The book itself has no value. It is only a piece of paper with some black and white pictures on it. So if by chance one shows disrespect to that kind of book, it's not disrespect to the knowledge. You cannot kick knowledge. There is no such object called knowledge that you can kick. It is something which can be grasped only through the mind. And therefore, you don't show any disrespect to any book, so Vedas or Bhagavad Gita or anything. Then why do we show so much respect? Because these books are the doorways by which we can acquire that knowledge. The door's value is only just to give you entrance. And if you don't have the key to the door, it's no good. And if you are lame, it's also no good. The door is open, but you can't go inside. Like the cookery books, you know. There was this young lady who got married, and she did not know anything about cooking. So, she put on the television series, somebody was showing how to cook first time. So, you collect these materials and do this, a little frying and all that. Half an hour the process took. And at the end of that, the television teacher is telling, now take up all that you cooked, throw it out of the window, go to the restaurant, buy the food and eat. Until you experiment this for many times, you cannot really get the hang of it. There are books that teach you music. I say where to put the finger and how to pronounce and all that. You are not going to become a great musician by that. But these books can help you. They are like doorways. That's why we show respect. These are all symbols. We bow down before Ramakrishna. And if you don't want to change your character, bow any number of bowing downs. It will only increase your hunger. It is not going to make you a saint. But they are helps to us. Like the maps, Sri Ramakrishna often used to say. Scriptures are like maps. What is the function of a map? It is to guide you how to reach your destination. But if you have no car, if you have no intention of reaching the destination, and if you can't read the map, it is of no use. So, by Vedas, it's really meant that supersensuous wisdom. That is the primary meaning. The secondary meaning is these books which contain that knowledge. We show the respect to those books because those books gradually lead us to that supreme knowledge. Then I was also telling you, there are so many details, stories, and the way of worship, sacrifices, and eulogies. If you do this, you will get this result. It's called Arthavada. Pump you with advertisement. If you do this, you will get this result. If you do Hanuman Chalisa 40 times, then you will never meet any accident. And he will kill your enemies and he will make you prosperous. Friday you worship Mother Lakshmi, then you will attain this and that. These are called Arthavada, eulogies. To make you inspired. Beyond that, it is not super sensuous knowledge. But gradually, this lower knowledge also leads us to the higher knowledge. And that is why they are also respected. A symbol helps you. You prostrate in front of Ramakrishna. It helps you. It won't give you that knowledge immediately, but it gradually makes you pure, thinking, introspective, transforms your character. Ultimately, it makes us understand the truth and practice it and realize it. That is why these books are also respected, honored, worshipped. There are sects which worship these books, you know that? Sikhs, for instance. In Gurudwara, if you go, they don't have any pictures or icons or images. They have this book. In many of our Hindu temples too, we worship the Vedas. And there is one day in a year, it is where Guru is worshipped. Guru Purnima we call it. On that day, these Vedas are, the books which contain these Vedas, they are also worshipped. They are only symbols, as I said. Now, another point that is to be made clear, I said that Rishis or Seers only discover. What do they discover? The eternal knowledge is eternal. Knowledge and the substance about which the knowledge comes, they both go together. If there is God, then the knowledge of God is inherent in God. The knowledge of God is not separate from God. Then why do we call separate these two? Here is God and here is knowledge about God. Because we are human beings, our minds are in the plane of duality. So for us to know about God, the mind undergoes certain transformation, and this transformation is called knowledge. But in reality, there is no difference between knowledge and the object which that knowledge really indicates. If God exists, and He exists eternally, then knowledge of God also exists eternally. And Vedas are called eternal. The knowledge of the Vedas is called eternal. Hindus believe the Vedas are eternal. What do you mean by eternal? Do you mean to say that these books have been existing for eternity? It's not the books which is meant. It is the knowledge which is meant. And that knowledge is eternal because God is eternal, reality is eternal, and therefore the knowledge about God also is eternal. In that sense, Vedas are eternal. It is the meaning of the Vedas, books, that is meant to be eternal, not the sounds, not the symbols. Now these two points also you have to keep in mind, sounds and symbols. What is, first of all, symbol? Symbol is, English language is symbol, you know, A, you write A like this, that is a symbol. And in Sanskrit, say for example, we write A. In a particular way. In Hindi we write in a particular way. In Telugu we write in a particular way. In Greek you write in a particular way. These are all symbols. These symbols are purely man-made things for the facility of understanding things. Every symbol is pronounced in a particular way. A particular sound comes. For example, cow. C-O-W, cow. How do you write cow? C O W. If it is English language, if it is Sanskrit, you write gau. These symbols are pronounced in a particular way, producing a particular sound, so that to convey that knowledge to the other person. Suppose you are closing your eyes and I say, here is a cow. Immediately that those sounds will produce a particular knowledge. There is a cow here. Suppose I say, instead of here is a cow, there is a cow. Here and there, two separate words, and they convey to you a different meaning. Or to give you a better illustration. Here is a tiger, ferocious tiger. And the moment, even if you are sleeping, you will jump up and try to run away. But if I say, there is a tiger 500 miles away. And you say, alright, let it be there. Don't disturb my sleep now. Here and there, these sounds are pronounced in such a particular way that they convey a particular knowledge to you, and that knowledge will affect you. So by Vedas or by supersensuous knowledge is neither meant the symbols nor meant the sounds. It is the ideas which are meant. So let me give an illustration. Supposing, instead of saying God, you know, the reality, highest reality in English language is called God. But in Sanskrit it is called Brahma. And if I don't know English and if you don't know Sanskrit, we will be quarreling with each other. No, it is not God, it is Brahman, I say. And you say, no, it is not Brahman, it is God. You are wrong. We go on quarreling. Why? Not knowing that these sounds are not important. But what is conveyed by both these sounds is the same. There is a Sufi story that once four pilgrims were journeying And at noon they got very hungry, and they have only between themselves, say, 1 pound. And they stopped at a village, and they wanted to buy some food. So one fellow said, he was a Hindu, "I want to buy khijur." And another fellow said, no, "I don't like khijur, and I like dates." Like that, each one is telling one word in their own language, and they started quarreling, "I don't accept your, this is what I want." The other fellow is telling, "This is what I want." They were all quarreling. Another passerby was going, and he heard them. He knew all the 4 languages, and he said, "Look here, you give me that pound, and I will give you what you want." So he bought the dates and gave to all of them. All of them wanted dates only, but expressing it in different words, sounds. They were all highly pleased. "What a great man you are, you fulfilled my desire." Everybody was thinking that he fulfilled his own desire, not knowing all of them were meaning the same thing, but using different sounds. All the scriptures in this world are like that. That is what Sri Ramakrishna is trying to illustrate. That is, there is a pond, there are 4 ghats. And the Hindus call that water jal. And the Muslim calls it pani. And the Englishman calls it water. And the Greek or Latin man calls it aqua. And they started quarreling, "This is not water, this is not pani, this is jal, this is aqua." The other fellow says, "No, this is jal. The Hindu is as fanatical as anybody else." Somebody who knew the truth, all the 4 languages, came and said, "Look here, don't quarrel. All of you are telling about the same thing, but you are using different words. That is why the quarrel is coming. This is the quarrel about between all religions and everybody." If we understand what is the meaning of eternal reality, it is that which the idea, the meaning conveyed by these sounds and as well as symbols. Symbols and sounds both are man-made. So, 2000 years back or 5000 years back, the ancient Rishi used the word Sanskrit language. And 150 years back, the modern Rishi has used first-class English language, beautiful English language. But do they differ in their content? They are talking about the same thing. So this is what we have to understand by the word eternality. Vedas are eternal, scriptures are eternal, Bible is eternal, Quran is eternal. Not in the sense of symbols, not in the sense of sounds, but in the sense of their idea, meaning. Hindus have a high regard for Vedas, that they are eternal. Eternal because they are God Himself. Knowledge is God Himself. That's why they worship these Vedas. Every religion worships its own scripture for that reason. But then we should not become idolaters, forgetting the essence, only taking the outer skin, and then go on quarreling with each other. Also, there is something speciality about these Vedas. They are called Shruti. Shruti means heard. That which is heard means, where do you hear? A Rishi meditates, and then he seems to hear the voice of God or voice of truth, because that knowledge has to come through the medium of the intellect. So that which seems to be heard, heard means not that some sound came on hearing through the ears, the idea that comes into the intellect. That's why they are called Shruti, as though God is uttering those words. You know, there are some fellows who are insane and they keep on hearing voices. You know that? Who is uttering those voices? Where from those sounds that voice is coming? From within themselves. And we hear lot of things in our own mind. And sometimes we hear also what other people don't say. We are very clever, you see. You know that lion and the androcles story? You know that? How this man went and removed the thorn from the paw of the lion, and then later on when he was thrown to be eaten by the lion. Unfortunately or fortunately for him, the same lion came into the arena and it recognized the man. You remember that story? Well, there was a cartoon about that. This cartoon goes into four parts. The first part is Androcles was going, one man was going. And he read just before going this story. And he saw a tiger with its paw up. That was the first. And he said, I must help this lion. So in the second cartoon, he removed that. And in the third cartoon, there were a few bones of this man. Lion. In the fourth one, another lion came and looking askance at this first lion, said, what the hell have you done? He helped you and you ate. And this lion was replying, you know, this man was so compassionate, he could not bear my suffering, he removed it. Now I am very hungry, I am sure he doesn't want me to suffer from hunger too. So we hear so many things which people do not mean, misinterpret and create all sorts of problems for ourselves and for others. That is not the meaning of the word Shruti means, that which is heard by these great sages through their purified hearts. They have the knowledge. To have that knowledge is what is called Shruti or heard. Secondly, these Vedas are also called Shruti because in the beginning, these great sages did not want to transmit this language, sacred knowledge or secret knowledge, through written word. And therefore, they used to convey it through words. They used to bring the ear of the disciple or student close to their mouth and then they used to utter this secret wisdom. That is how the tradition of from the teacher to the student, from the student again to his student, the tradition has come. These Hindus regarded these Vedas in such a great reverence that they thought even changing of half the syllable of this sacred knowledge is so unholy, so bad, that they went on same way that they heard, they passed this knowledge. That's why today you will see that these Vedic knowledge that Hindus have possessed have come unchanged since time immemorial, from the very beginning. So coming back to our subject again, he said Upanishads go by the word Vedanta. Veda means the sacred knowledge, knowledge about super sensuous knowledge. And these Vedas in the beginning were four. Veda means simply knowledge. There have been so many people who prayed to God, purified themselves, and then got this knowledge, revelation of that knowledge. They discovered this knowledge. And they went on spreading it here and there. So in the beginning, it is said that this knowledge was scattered in an, what is called, disorganized fashion. And so a great man came along, and he saw that this knowledge is so wonderful, but it is so scattered, disorganized. I must make a meaning of it, organize it properly, so that it can be passed on in a systematic way. This, you know the name of that great man? Yes. Called Vedavyasa. Vedavyasa is not the name of a man, he is the title of this great rishi. It is a title. Veda. Vyasa means editor. Vedavyasa means editor of the Veda, Vedic knowledge. So he collected all the extant knowledge of his time, divided them into four parts, and then passed on this knowledge to four of his disciples, who went on passing out that knowledge to their disciples. And these four parts are the well-known four Vedas called Rig Veda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharva Veda. Now these Vedas again can be divided into two parts, two divisions. One is called Karma Kanda, another is called Jnana Kanda, the ritual portion or work portion, and then the sacrificial portion, and the second one is the knowledge portion. So, what in the modern times came to be known as Vedanta is mostly the second part, which consists of these Upanishads. But in reality, the first portion is as important as the second portion. The knowledge portion is only not the only important portion. The work portion too is very important. It is like a person wants to become a doctor. As soon as the baby is born, are you going to admit him into this medical college immediately? Does he not need to know the alphabets, then go through this nursery and primary and high school and A levels and all that? So the karma kanda is like that. The karma kanda is meant for two purposes. One purpose is it bestows material prosperity in this world. It also bestows felicity in the other world, afterlife. And it purifies the heart. It makes a person ready to receive that highest knowledge. Before we can become fit to receive that real knowledge of God, which leads us from the unreal to the real, we must recognize that this world is really unreal. If you don't have headache, would you go to a doctor? If you don't have hunger, would you seek food? First you must feel that this world is very unreal. Do we feel this world is unreal really? For us, this world is so real. God is so unreal. We will realize him. After retirement there is enough time we can think of God. Now let us bother about this world. So karma kanda really is that particular discipline by which we are slowly led in an evolutionary process from brutes to human beings, to superhuman beings. The preparation for spiritual life is what is called karma kanda. Many people just reading textbooks, they say, oh, this karma kanda, these people were so busy performing sacrifices, worshipping God, so many things. It's not important. Let us buy a book from the Vedanta Center on the Upanishads and go on reading it. You will get nothing. Only Vedanta Center gets profit if you buy the books. It's because you don't have the hunger for that knowledge. Hunger also means fitness. Hunger means really fitness, you know. You can't produce artificial hunger. It will only lead to indigestion. You have to work hard. You have to digest what you ate formerly. Then only you get hungry. That means hungry means you are ready. One has to be hungry for the highest truth, knowledge. And the karma kanda is that which leads. These Vedas traditionally are again studied in four different ways. The Samhita, the Brahmana, the Aranyaka and the Upanishad. As I said, we are going to study Upanishad. That comes only in the very end. Samhitas are a collection of prayers. Samhita means actually a collection. A collection of prayers to different gods for prosperity, for money, from curing from sickness. It is said that man's evolution progresses in four steps. First, there is distress. Man wants to get rid of the suffering, the distress. Second, man is not suffering from anything, but he is thoroughly dissatisfied. He wants more of happiness, worldly happiness. So he prays to God. Third, after enjoying this world and the heavenly world, then he gets disgusted. This is what is this eternal coming and going and then all that. Is there any eternal peace, eternal rest? Then inquiry starts. What is the truth? And the fourth stage is he realizes it following the practice of his teachings of his teacher and he is at rest. This is the evolutionary process. So, the Vedas are divided into these four portions. The Samhita, and comes the Brahmana, and comes the Aranyaka, and comes the Upanishad. Samhita, as I said, is a collection of prayers for different gods and goddesses. You fulfill my desire, this, you destroy our enemies, get rid of all diseases, give us good harvest, etc. What is called the Brahmana, not to be confused with the word Brahmana, who is the upper caste man. Brahmana is actually a part of the Vedas. It prescribes the details, how to worship God, sit facing this way, and how many bricks you have to arrange, how many faggots, how many flowers you have to offer, how many kinds, varieties of curries you have to offer to please Ramakrishna. All these details are given in the so-called Brahmanas. Then while doing the worship or sacrifice, you feel sleepy, isn't it? You feel sleepy. How long can you go on worshipping? Suppose, you know, you attended some of our celebrations of Ramakrishna's birthday, Holy Mother's birthday. Supposing everybody is sitting silent and only I am worshipping, sitting and worshipping there for 2 hours. You know what happens? The evolutionary process, you prostrate and sit and start doing japa. This is the second step. The third step. The fourth step. So the ancient people had the same problem. How long can you go on? And those sacrifices used to go on for years and years together, from early morning till night. So they wanted to introduce a little bit of variety. Why not please God instead of droning, going on droning about? Sing a little bit. So some of the hymns put to music, and so that one can sing them beautifully and rhythmatically. That is called this third portion is called Samaveda, which has come. So Aranyakas prescribe this, sorry, Brahmanas prescribe all the varieties of worshipping, etc. After doing for a long time this puja and other things externally, collecting materials and taking so much trouble and all that, people also become old. They don't have so much energy to do, collect things and to sit long time and to do. They want to internalize this worship or prayer to God. And that is where this third thing comes, Aranyaka. Aranya means forest. Aranyaka means forest treaties. That is, make all this worship an internal symbol. Worship God mentally, internally. And if that is done properly, then comes your person is ready. Then he is ready for the highest wisdom or knowledge, which is called Upanishad. Now, the ancient Indo-Aryans have also divided life into 4 categories. The student life, the married life, the retired life, and completely giving up everything, the monk's life. Brahmacharya, Garhastya, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa. Now, these 4 portions of what is called Vedic knowledge pertain to these 4 stages of life. When a person is young and a student, he is supposed to thoroughly master, memorize, understand. Then he becomes a householder, enters into the second stage of life. Then Brahmanas come into, he has to perform all the puja, sacrifices, everything. Then his children grow up. His hair slowly starts becoming grey. Our hair never becomes grey because we are putting all that hair dye, you know. Even 90 years old man or old woman, shiny black hair. How come? So, when a person, this hair is supposed to become grey, children have grown up, the man has seen what is the worldly happiness, he gracefully retires into the forest, and then the third part of the Vedas, which is called Aranyaka. You sit there and then sit comfortably and slowly do the worship eternally, symbolically, internally. So it is supposed that if a person has done all these things properly, he led a good student life, he led a righteous householder's life, worshipped gods and goddesses, and then he gracefully retired along with his wife, performed this mental worship very systematically for a long time, his mind becomes pure. Into his mind comes the fitness and the inquiry, what is the highest truth? Then he approaches the teacher, listens to the teaching of the Upanishads, and the life is fulfilled. So you see, these 4 stages of life are not really divisions of actual age, but it is a mental development or a spiritual evolution. Also, Indian society has divided people into 4 castes. The Shudra, the Vaishya, the Kshatriya and the Brahmana. Again, these four castes are not arbitrary way of dividing people into superior and inferior, but according to their qualifications, dividing them. You are less spiritual, you are a Shudra. A little more spiritual, you are a Vaishya. A little much more spiritual, you are a Kshatriya. And you are completely spiritual, you are a Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who knows Brahman, who knows God, who knows the eternal reality. So, coming back to the Upanishads, Vedanta means Veda Anta. Anta means has two meanings, essence and end. What it means is, because these books called Upanishads come at the end of every Veda, and therefore it is called Vedanta. Also, they form the very essence of the Vedas, because that is the highest knowledge, supreme wisdom, supersensuous wisdom. Therefore, it is the essence of the Vedas. Therefore, it is also called Vedanta. By Vedanta is meant Upanishads, the essence of Vedas. What is the essence of the Vedas? That there is a truth. Eternal reality exists. This is asserted by the realization of the seer. And the goal of life is to realize that eternal reality. All our actions are meant to lead to that highest goal. So what the Upanishad really wants to teach us is the highest truth. Brahman, Brahma Jnana, the knowledge of Brahman, Brahma Vidya. So there are so many Upanishads are there. Primarily there, it is said in one of the Upanishads, there are 108 Upanishads. There are even so many other Upanishads which have come in later times, which have not been accepted traditionally. There is even one Upanishad called Allah Upanishad. A Muslim has written Allah Upanishad. He simply saw the other Upanishads, wrote something in Sanskrit like that and gave the name Allah Upanishad. What is the essence of the Allah Upanishad? Allah is the only God. You worship no other God but my Allah. If you worship any other God, your head will be cut off, either by me or by somebody else. This is what is Allah Upanishad about. Traditionally, 108 Upanishads are there. Of them, there are 10 Upanishads which are most important, beginning with Isha Upanishad and ending with Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I will further discuss this background a little bit and then enter straight away into one of the shortest and the one of the best Upanishads, Isavasya Upanishad, from our next class onwards. Next Saturday, we have the birthday celebration of Sri Ramakrishna on 16th. So you are most welcome to attend the celebration. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.